Rising rates on the 10-year and the 30-year, Chair Powell on the Hill, volatility in tech stocks, the reopening and rotation trade. Tom Thornton is here to talk it over. Welcome, Tom.
Ash, how are you? Nice to see you.
Nice to see you as well. Always an eventful day when you were here. I believe last time it was like the chaos of after hours.
Last time was the, okay, so the GameStop thing was going full bore, and it was after the market closed. And then I'm watching on one screen over here, GameStop after hours just went crazy after going crazy during the day. And then you said, you're not going to believe this. And then it was Elon with his tweet, and right. It just was chaos. But wow. Yeah, it's been quite a month.
Yes, it has. And it always seems to be action-packed when you're here. I should say we're filming now around 3:45 p.m. Eastern time, so just off the close. Tom, take us through, in your view, the big picture for what's happening right now.
There are two trades happening right now in the equity market. And the first is the reopening stocks. And you have airlines and hotels, which I think are going to probably move a little higher. They have pricing power going forward, not forever, but going forward. The prices on flights and hotels are just astronomical if you haven't checked. Mm-hmm. Then you have retail, restaurants. I think you're going to see those do well, but they don't have the pricing power, and they're getting priced in right now, I think, the best case scenario. On top of it, the two sectors I've liked the most over the last 6 months has been energy and financials. And I do expect those to carry forward and to continue higher with the reopening. I think those are the most pure play reopening type sectors you want to be in, because they just cover everything.
Yeah, you've been bullish on those sectors since October or so. Let's take a look. If you're looking for some unalloyed good news, let's take a look at the U.S. currently hospitalized with COVID-19 charts. You know, the striking thing about this chart when I look at it is that the third wave there on the right has fallen below the 60,000 level for currently hospitalized with COVID. And intriguingly, that was the level where we peaked on waves one and two. So this is good news, Tom, to exactly your point, reopening and the idea that people are going to start moving again, traveling again, a good thing.
Yeah, I'm very excited because I just found out in Connecticut, I can register to get a shot on March 1st. So March 1st at 12:01, I will be online, laptop in bed, getting my my spot. So I'm very excited about that. I think it's going to be a really good summer. I think people are going to be upbeat, excited, certainly very grateful for what we've gone through and to move forward. What I was saying just a second ago, though, is there's another side of the trade, and that's with interest rates. And interest rates have been going up. Better news, better economic news. We have rates moving higher. It's always a particular situation when you have rates moving higher, if it's going to be unruly, where rates move too fast and the rate of change, the bond managers can't handle that quick enough. And then the other thing is higher rates will put a crimp into the higher leveraged, higher growth equity stocks that now, after a few turns of multiples higher this last year, because they could, based on lower rates, I think it's going to be a situation where those stocks are going to start to feel some pressure. And we've seen it already. This last week has been really tough on the NASDAQ.
Right. You know, to exactly that point, Tom, for people who don't follow the credit markets as closely as you do, let's put up two charts. First, the 10-year U.S. Treasury yield, which hit a low in August of 2020, about 50 basis points. I think 51 was the low. Currently at 1.36%, a significant rise. 30-year U.S. Treasuries, also August of 2020, below 1.2, currently trading at 2.2 on a yield basis. 100 basis points since August, a lot of movement.
Yeah, you have to realize that those are losses that bond managers are taking And, you know, this is bond market hasn't been a place where you're saying, oh boy, I'm going to just get 75 basis points for 10 years or, you know, 1.36% over 10 years. The bond market has been a situation where people have wanted a capital appreciation rather than a yield. And we've been so used to yields going lower and lower and lower. And, you know, there was so much talk of negative interest rates, just keeping that capital appreciation trade going. But here we are, we're backing up in yields right now. And I think the Fed is starting to notice, again, Jay Powell didn't say anything different. I thought maybe he might signal something or just in a very subtle way in a question, you know, one of the questions he was asked, but he stayed on script and they're going to just keep their foot on the gas until inflation gets out of control. And that could be a real problem for the equity market because it's really hard to reverse inflation. And we really haven't seen inflation. A lot of people that have been in the markets a long time have rarely seen strong inflation, and certainly not with the type of stimulus that we have from the Fed and the monetary stimulus that's coming down the pike.
Yeah, it's an entire generation who have never witnessed inflation before. And just to repeat, for people who aren't as familiar with the credit markets as you are, yields back up or rise, prices decline, the capital accumulation, the capital accretion that's been happening in there is reversing now.
Yeah, and you know, again, it's a capital appreciation story in the bond market, and people have gone to the equity market for yield because you can get a great yield in the S&P, and there's so many stocks in the S&P that have high yield or higher yield than the 10-year, obviously, or the 30-year. So it's been actually you get growth and you get capital appreciation right in the equity market, and that's why equities in the U.S. have been so strong.
Yeah, the joke being that stocks for yield and bonds for capital appreciation, the world's a little bit upside down.
Yeah, it's going to be that way for a while. And my view is that the yields could go higher in the intermediate term. I've targeted 1.56 on the 10-year yield. And I will say, though, there is a possibility in the next week that the bond market could rally a bit because you have end of the month pension rebalance. And we've seen such a wide spread between bond performance, which has been awful, and equity performance, which has been pretty good despite this week's big pullback. And, you know, it's something to keep an eye on. We could see a short-term move lower in the 10-year yield and the 30-year, but it may be right towards the end of the month, the last day.
Yeah. And just to contextualize that, NASDAQ up 44% in 2020 and up 4.5% on the year so far. Here we are on February 23rd, up 4.5% already. And to put the bigger picture on that, average return on the NASDAQ about 10% per year, depending on the look back period. But if you're looking for a long-term average, pretty close to 10%.
It's really interesting also that you have all these mega cap stocks that haven't performed that well year to date. And, you know, you can look at some of them that, you know, have backed off. Apple backed off a bunch. I think they're going to close green on the day. And today is just an incredible day. We were down 3.5% on the NDX. And I think we could squeak out a win here. And that is a big deal. That's a huge rebound. But I'm also thinking right now that we should have a correction. I don't see the typical indicators and sentiment readings as being set at a low risk entry opportunity right now. It's going to take some time. And what's been happening in the NASDAQ especially is that we see these gap downs and then we see this struggle higher from the morning lows. And it's just been a pattern that I've been watching for the last week. And I think we'll see a lower high. And I wrote it down on the S&P, like 39 for the S&P as well. 3930 is the targeted lower high that I think we're going to be under, and then lower perhaps into the beginning of March. And, you know, it's hard because you've got a backdrop of really good news. With the reopening, people are getting vaccines. The data, I spoke to someone in London today. He's complaining that Boris Johnson isn't opening London fast enough and all of England. I think there's a lot of pressure on politicians to get things open. So that's a good thing. You get higher yields, and that's, you know, it's going to offset. So that's a bit different of what we've been seeing. It's not going to be like 2020.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting also to talk about the distinction between the speed and the actual overall level of bond rates, because this is such an important point when you think about interest rates, is the way that these have moved so quickly. These are really big jumps from a very low base.
Well, I've been in the I've been personally trading in the market since 1987. I'm giving my age up here. But the point is that we haven't really seen a bond market crash. 1994, there was a bit of that. We've seen yields back up, but just very manageable. So if we did see some sort of backup in rates, that the rate of change became unruly, I think that's going to be very, very spooky in the market. And you just have so much debt out there,
right?
Especially since the 2008, 2009 period, there's just more debt on top of debt. And that, to me, is a real problem. If all of those bonds suddenly become, you know, the capital's negative in those. So if your basis is, you know, if you start to see losses in your bond portfolio, people are going to sell them, and it's going to be tough.
We just hit 4 p.m. on the East Coast. U.S. equity markets have closed. The Dow came back 360 some odd points, effectively to close flat, up 0.04% on the day to 31,535. NASDAQ almost flat, closes at 13,465, minus 0.5% on the day. Tom, we were talking a little bit off camera about the rotation trade. You've been doing this for a very long time. You've been in these markets for decades. For people who don't follow them as close as you do, who don't understand the exact significance of what this rotation trade is about, could you give us the context for that?
Well, here's a little, let's go back 10 years, and five stocks in the NASDAQ and the S&P have done all the heavy lifting, and they've done more than 60% of all the attribution in those particular indexes. And they've become so mega in their capitalization. I mean, trillions of dollars are just concentrated in these great companies. But here's the thing. They're not cheap. And historically, Apple trading, I think it's 35 times earnings. That's very expensive for an Apple. Microsoft's up there as well. I think that having low interest rates has enabled these big tech companies to trade at a higher multiple because they were basically just excellent growth stories. They've had, you know, great cash flow. Really, they've done exceptionally well. But here's the thing. Every once in a while, there is a new game in town. And I can tell you that I remember back in the 90s and, even in the 2000s, the energy markets became the one sector you wanted to be in.
Right.
And I really feel like energy is super cheap. And here's another stat. Goldman Sachs and their hedge fund monitor yesterday, they said that the energy sector is the one sector that has a normal short interest level. They're at the 65 percentile of their historical short interest reading. There's eight sectors below the third percentile, lower percentile, as far as how much short interest. And tech is at the zero percentile. So you have very few people that are short tech. And I'm not necessarily saying go out and short tech, but you might see those stocks that have led this market for so long go sideways. And if they go sideways, so be it. They can contract and they can go sideways and there'll be good trading opportunities. But if energy starts to come on and they're the cheapest sector by valuation, and they, in my opinion, have the most to gain from the Biden administration. I know people might say, oh, wait, he's against the energy sector, but that's exactly what we want. We want someone that's going to put more regulation. It's going to cut the drilling licenses around the country and make it harder for drilling to happen. Now, you make it harder for drilling to happen, the supply goes down, reopening of the economy with, airplanes, more electricity, travel. I mean, just everything. Energy prices will go up with that demand. So you have a lower supply, higher demand. It actually is like interest rates as well, because it's a higher inflation thing, and higher the crude prices or all energy prices, it hits the consumer harder, almost like a tax. So I think, though, that the energy sector still has a lot of leeway to go. And the other thing is seasonality. It's really, really strong from the beginning of February to the end of May. And I think it could stretch out even further as we get more reopening. So I think that there's a real possibility for a rotation to what's hot. And, it's the Wall Street Bets people are perfect. They rotated from, Tesla to GameStop to Bitcoin to Ethereum. They rotate and look for what's working. And they're going to discover what Exxon does and say, oh, I get a yield for that if they keep it for more than, 2 days. But the bottom line is these are great investments, and I think that they'll continue.
Yeah, and of course, your friend Tony Greer also bullish on those same energy stocks. The other point that you made, as people start to contextualize this rotation play, is the idea of, like you were saying, like a tax. And in some ways, you could say that rising interest rates, when you're discounting future cash flows on these growth stocks, the higher rates rise, the lower the the lower the appeal of those earnings gets over time. Rates very low, growth stocks very favorable.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think it's going to be a year that's going to be complex. It's not going to be a year where the growth stories really shine and show that what they have. I think that Microsoft, Apple, some of these other large ones, I mean, Amazon, obviously, with all the home delivery, they've done great with people at home or working from home. But it's now going to be like, okay, you got to really show us what you got. And, a lot of those companies have withheld guidance because they just don't want to give guidance, or they just don't have a real good read on guidance. And so they're going to have to give guidance. And the other thing is, I think there's going to be a real bounce with all of these recovery stocks, energies, financial, all of them. Hotels, restaurants, airlines, and we've already seen it. Some of them are already priced in, I think. But that's going to end as well. So I think the second half of the year, it's going to be back to normal. And then what? Then what do we do? Is the market going to keep going up? People are going to look for value. They're going to look for what's going to work. And we'll see what happens with the Fed if they normalize or if they just, you know, back off a little. So I think this year is going to be a front-loaded year, and then the second half is going to be a little bit more complex.
Yeah, Jay Powell's testimony today up on the Hill suggests that their concern is still inadequate inflation. And that's based on the data that they're seeing. Obviously, that could change as the reopening continues, as companies have pricing power. What's your thought on the context there and how that decision is going to be made?
Well, there's never been the Federal Reserve chairman that's seen inflation. I think going back to Volcker, maybe. Everything I look at has gone up in price from energy costs to food costs. I mean, food costs are off the charts. And college, if anybody has kids in college like I do, it's out of control. And I really worry about what's coming down the road, what's going to happen with that. House prices have gone through the roof, to say the least. I mean, you got to use that one. Commodities like lumber made it just a big spike. And all of these, you know, the demand for copper, there's inflation there. And they measure it in this way where it stays very, very low. I mean, look, they've had QE since 2009, and they haven't been able to get inflation over 2%. But I can tell you, prices have gone up. And everybody else listening here is saying, yeah, he's right. Everything's gone up.
Yeah.
So I think that it's going to have to be a real big spike in inflation for them to get concerned or do something. And you know, one last thing about Powell. I really think that Powell should, in the next couple months, signal that they're going to moderate and then start moderating. And they can have it with the cover of the fiscal stimulus that's coming. So the Fed can just say, okay, fine, you know, we're going to just, instead of $120 billion of crap we're going to buy, we're going to take it down to 100 and then 80 and see how that goes and test it that way. They do have to slow this down because it's just going to get worse if they don't, because there'll be another problem down the road.
Yeah. You, of course, are a veteran of the taper tantrum. You remember the last time the Fed tried to withdraw accommodation and then ultimately, were forced to concede and to continue the purchasing at the same rate. What are your thoughts about that? And is there the possibility of a taper tantrum, or would markets potentially welcome some normalization, particularly on the balance sheet side?
Well, the first couple moments of that taper, everybody got nervous, like, oh my God, what's going to happen? I think it'll be different this time. I really do. I think that people are looking at it like, okay, we've got a lot of money in the system, a lot more than we had way back when with Bernanke.
2013, I think.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of wind in the sails of the economy right now. And in the market for the most part. And look, if we have up and down 10% a few times this year, or even down 20%, I think that would be healthy for price discovery and for the markets. But it's always the first or second mention, or even the beginning of it, that causes the most pain. Because if you look back, I mean, Janet Yellen is the only Fed chairman I've seen, you know, who was raising rates continuously. And under her, as rates were and tapering was happening, rates were going up and the equity markets went crazy on the upside. So
right,
there's, a bit to look at it and say higher rates, you know, maybe not the worst thing.
Yeah. It didn't last long though, did it?
Well, no, because I think what happened is that with all, and this is one of my big concerns, that I wake up at 3 a.m. and, you know, take a Xanax and say, oh my God, I don't want to think about this. But there's so much debt in the markets right now. And if yields go up and bond prices go down, and this becomes a funding issue for a lot of companies, I don't think that it's going to go well, to say the least. I mean, I was going to use a really bad word there. Like, I think we're, as Julian Brigden, I talk to every week, I have these wonderful calls with him, and he's like, the Fed has no idea what's going to happen with yields higher. They have no plan. They don't know what to do. And, I just think that we need a Fed that can look at what's going on and be a little stronger and say, okay, market, you know, we're going to pull some back here. Deal with it. The market will deal with it. And if the Fed says, hey, deal with it, you know, let's see what happens. I just think that he was looking at, you know, some of the larger mega firms, clearing firms, maybe Citadel, BlackRock, I don't know, back when he got panicky and started the taper, or not the taper, the repo market craziness. And then, you know, the markets really fell apart and he had no choice. He had to back off. But I think that it was just, it was just one thing that led to another. And, you know, he could have gone a little softer this time in the spring. I think they went a little too far. And I think they're going to have to admit that.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan, but nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
Tom, one of the things that interests me is Chair Powell coming into the role in his testimony and his commentary and his initial statements when he was leading the Fed. The impression that we were left with was that he was going to begin to withdraw some of the accommodation, some of the extraordinary accommodation. And then, as you said, had no choice. I wonder what it is that Jay Powell knows or sees or thinks he sees that leads him to believe that he does, in fact, have no choice.
It's obvious. There is so much leverage and debt in the system that something will break. And that's how markets get, there's price discovery. Something's going to break. And if yields continue to go up, I think it's going to put more pressure on a lot of companies, a lot of small cap companies are zombie companies. They just pay the yield on their debt and roll it over. And that will be a much more expensive proposition for them. They're going to have a tough time. And I really wish we did have leadership that could say, okay, deal with it. Deal with it. You will be able to deal with it. And just say it like that. I mean, Volcker was a person that had said it basically how he saw it. I mean, he just would say exactly what was on his mind. But we've been lulled into this, the Fed's always going to be there to bail us out. And, you know, people are going to freak out. You know, the NASDAQ was down 5%. I mean, oh my God, you know, what are they going to do? You know, say something. Don't be dovish. You know, God, it's killing me.
Yeah. You know, exactly that condition that you talked about. Hyman Minsky called them Ponzi borrowers, the idea that you could just basically borrow to continue to finance your own debt, refinance your own debt, and service it based on new borrowing. And when the new borrowing stops, you get, I guess the ugly term is the Minsky moment.
Yeah. And, you know, another thing that happened with all these, you know, these pullbacks that we had, there were very few bankruptcies, very few. And usually when you have some sort of cataclysmic type move and a pandemic and everything's, you know, going to hell, you're going to have bankruptcies. And the Fed came in and said, oh, we're just going to go out and buy high yield and investment grade, and we're going to keep buying and buying and buying and buying, and basically put off the inevitable for a lot of companies. And I'm not thrilled about if, you know, hearing if a company goes bankrupt, but capitalism has to work. And this hasn't been capitalism. This has been something else. And, you know, the longer we continue this, I think the harder it will be down the road when you do hit that Minsky moment.
Yeah, these are the 13-3, so-called 13-3 facilities out of the New York Fed, the liquidity facilities that are an alphabet soup, things like commercial paper, funding facility, primary dealer credit facility, money market mutual fund liquidity facility. It's hard to pronounce them all in rapid succession. But the general idea is exactly the point that you made, which are these are facilities that are meant to provide liquidity for debt, and to provide the ability for companies to continue to finance and refinance that, to continue to roll over their credit.
Yeah. But here's the thing. That sounds great. Like they're going to handle what is already there. But guess what happens? Companies could say, okay, great. They start issuing more debt on top of more debt.
Right.
And they don't like slow down. It's like saying, okay, the Fed's got us. Let's issue, you know, a boatload more debt. I mean, the issuance this month in February is just absurd. I mean, it's, I think it was like $160 billion of issuance in investment grade and high yield. I mean, that's just absurd right now. They just keep, let's just issue more. You know, it'll never end. The Fed's going to buy it all.
Yeah. And the flip side of that, of course, is that very difficult during a pandemic to figure out how to support these companies. Much more challenging for Congress with all of the political challenges there to do this on the fiscal side. So the Fed steps in. Again, this is this idea of having no choice. But the problem is if you have no choice today and you do the same thing tomorrow, then you have no choice the day after.
Yeah. And look, I'm not against the Fed coming in during a pandemic when everything's, you know, closing. I mean, we've never been in a world where everything closes. So I'm happy the Fed came in. But one of the problems that they did was they came in and they said, we're going to do this much. The markets started to bottom. Then we're going to do more. And it was like, you didn't need to do that little extra. Let it sort of get into the system. You know, the big problem that they were saying is, you know, the credit markets are broken. Credit markets weren't broken. They were priced. There was a price discovery there. You know, broken is another term for being down. And that, you know, again, it's capitalism. You have to let prices, you know, you need price discovery in this world. And unfortunately, it's very difficult in a lot of assets. And again, people are just accustomed to the Fed's going to come in and save the day. And how big can they get? You know, the amount of debt is going to be very tough. And the long-term aspects of it, and I'm saying long-term, which could be in like 2 years, is going to be tough for, you know, when, or actually, think of it, as I just said, you know, as the normalization, it's going to be tough when we have all this debt and these companies have a lot more debt for the payback. So that could be when things start to unwind. And I'm not declaring, you know, the world's going to end, but I just think that a little less exuberance in the market, sideways to slightly up, more of a moderate gain. There's going to be huge gains in certain places, and I'm going to find them. I'm going to do the best I can to find them. But I also think that it's going to be a time of normalization, and normalization is sometimes boring.
We hope. Well, I guess Kris Kristofferson had it that freedom was another term for nothing left to lose. Tom Thornton, broken is just another word for down. Tom, you're one of our favorite guests on Real Vision Daily Briefing, and I think this conversation shows why. To break it down for people, we've done a lot of the philosophy, a lot of the broader context. Let's get nuts and bolts here as we come to the end of this conversation and talk a little bit about what you're going to be looking for, what market signals you've got your eyes peeled for, and specifically what your outlook is based on these indicators.
Okay, there's a few things that I look at, and I on my site, Hedge Fund Telemetry, we post charts. That's the Daily Sentiment Index from Jake Bernstein, TradeFutures.com. But we have great charts from, and bullish sentiment is around 65% right now. It got to 90%. NASDAQ got to 93%. To put it into context, in March, it was at 4%. And when I get something under 5% or above 95%, I'm going to take the other side of that every single time, no matter what is happening. So back in March, I got really, really bullish. I covered every single short, except that stupid EV company that ran me over. But I'm short again, and it's starting to work. So anyway, somebody just pinged me and said, Kathy Wood bought a lot of Tesla today, a headline or something. So, oh, great. Anyway.
There's a Kathy Wood of ARK.
Kathy Wood. Anyway, I got sidetracked. The indicators that I'm looking at, I want to see market sentiment at least at 50% at the midway point. If you get down to 20%, the market's going to feel awful. I want to start looking at stuff to buy there. People that don't have access to our site can also look very simple stuff like the percentage of S&P stocks above the 10-day, 20-day, and 50-day. And I focus more on the 20-day. When it gets under 20% or close, that's getting oversold. The 50-day at 25%, you can most likely see some sort of a bounce, unless there's something more devious going on in the market, like a pandemic, because that went to 1% right above the 50-day. So those are the simple little things that I'm looking for. A few other, indicators. I look at 100 indicators. But those are very simple ones to kind of keep an eye on.
Yeah. Tom Thornton, a perfect way to close. Thanks again for joining us. Thanks for joining us, everyone.
All right. Thanks, Ash. See ya.